from Kansas University, was unable to make it to the meeting at the last minute. I think the presentation which we will hear is certainly a worthy substitute, however, and very appropriate to this year's meeting. Our subject is contemporary Canadian jazz on record, and our very gracious speaker, very graciously agreeing to give a speech on such short notice, is Lois Moody, who is past president and a founding member of Jazz Ottawa, and also currently the jazz columnist and reviewer for the Ottawa Citizen. Ms. Moody.
You don't know how sorry I am that Ivan Payne isn't here. But in pinch hitting for him, we can't obviously deal with his subject, but we will have an informal look at the current Canadian jazz scene through recordings, and I think it'll tie in very nicely with the next item on this morning's agenda. It will not be an historical survey or even a complete review of the performance and business ends of today's music, but just a few illustrations and comments that are representative of the current situation and the directions in which we seem to be moving. I'd like to start with a little wake-up music for you that I think might hold a few surprises. For professional recording technique. That was a tune called Fast Forward, and I like to think that indicates how the Canadian jazz scene is progressing. The musicians were all high school students when that recording was made in 1978 at the finals of the Canadian Stage Band Festival. Production was by Radio Canada, our government-funded broadcasting service. That combination leads us, I think, quite naturally to a number of questions about jazz in Canada. First, who plays and listens to jazz? Who encourages and promotes jazz? Who is involved in recording? And what direction is jazz taking? Well, first of all, age seems no barrier to jazz appreciation. An older generation has retained interest in big bands and combos that go back to the early traditional sounds of New Orleans and move right on through swing, mainstream, bop, and all those other impossible labels that have been applied to successive innovations in the music. The present generation, raised on rock, has discovered jazz in various ways. Their parents' record collections, digging into the roots of rock to discover their blues themes and patterns, and the improvisational element that is so vital to jazz. There are also excellent opportunities within the educational system to make music themselves instead of just settling for a passive role. Provision of instruments and programs that lead to playing in a variety of formats and styles have introduced thousands of students to the pleasures of creating music for themselves. High teaching standards and enthusiastic instructors have just added to that appeal. Like most forms of creative effort, jazz must be encouraged and supported if it's to develop at all. We've mentioned the schools. Directing itself toward this very great talent pool, the nonprofit Canadian Stage Band Festival is now in its 8th year of organizing regional, provincial, and national competitions to showcase young talent and to provide opportunities for development through listening to their peers and hearing the adjudications of top professionals. Parallel clinics and workshops provide further opportunities for them. From 18 bands in 1973 to over 800 this year is a pretty phenomenal growth rate. This year's national finals were held in Ottawa just last weekend, and one of the highlights was a 3-hour winner's showcase concert in the National Arts Center featuring the big band and combo finalists. This was carried live for the first time across the country via a network of over 200 cable TV stations, with two private broadcasting firms underwriting and sponsoring the production. So public, governmental, and business sectors are very slowly learning about the maturing performance levels that we have and lending their active support. Within the media, this is a sore spot with me, the tendency has been to give print space or airtime to what is already known and popular, and therefore most likely to sell papers or attract listeners and advertising. Minority interest music and jazz has to be considered one of those, and new performers have a tough time. A few radio stations include jazz in their programming, and the first all-jazz station has just begun operating in Vancouver. The federally sponsored Radio Canada was for years the only reliable source of broadcast jazz in this country, and its specialty programs were instrumental in promoting Canadian performers, composers, and arrangers. The Learning Systems Division of the CBC, the parent corporation of Radio Canada, is also in the recording business, and its catalog of jazz items keeps growing, although very slowly. This is a sample of their catalog if anyone would like to look at it later. It includes all kinds of music, of course. Apart from these sources, tangible support has been spotty at best. A jazz-loving club owner or a manager may try to maintain a jazz policy for his room, but even in high-density population areas, the interest market would seem to be barely sufficient to sustain the economic burden. Venues for live jazz lead an uncertain existence at best, but at the moment, the picture is reasonably healthy. Jazz societies formed in recent years in numerous cities across the country show that a listening and performing core does exist. In turn, these pressure groups, as we like to think of them, have drawn attention to a ready market, and they've helped to influence the booking policies of club owners and concert promoters, and to some extent, the coverage policies of both print and broadcast media. Although jazz will probably remain a minority interest music, its supporters and participants are a really determined lot. Now, playing for fun in a friend's basement, or performing in a school group or rehearsal band, and perhaps even playing occasional gigs in clubs for minimum wages, that's one thing. Getting into a recording studio is quite another. Like the media and club or concert promoters, recording executives prefer to go with a proven quantity. Volume sales tend to override any convictions about the music itself or any feeling of responsibility to present deserving new talent and to provide adequate promotion to penetrate public consciousness. Major companies, or subsidized bodies, such as the CBC, will add some jazz content to their catalogs, but rely on volume selling of other music types to keep an acceptable profit margin. Smaller companies have to operate in similar fashion. The Canadian recording industry might well be a little embarrassed by the efforts of an American jazz man called Gene Perla, who, in addition to an active writing and playing career, owns and manages his own record label, PM. Perla has such faith in Canadian jazz performers that he has set up a Canadian subsidiary. And now, over half of PM's total catalog of roughly 20 items features Canadian performers. Perhaps one of the largest Canadian-owned labels is Canadian Talent Library. Its primary aim is to produce albums for broadcast use. CTL sometimes enters leasing agreements with companies such as Phonadisc or United Artists to capitalize on wider distribution services. Not surprisingly, this brand of jazz tends to be rather polite and restrained, and the tracks are limited to little more than 2 minutes, just so radio listeners won't be kept waiting for too long for the next sequence of ads or DJ chatter. Attic Records, another established Canadian company, records on its own and leases albums from other sources, such as the CBC. Now, this again is not an outlet for undiscovered talent, but for proven names such as Rob McConnell, whose big band is perhaps the most dynamic in Canada today. Always stacked with the cream of Toronto-based jazz men, this band has recorded for a variety of companies. They're more fortunate than most. Now, here's a sample of the McConnell sound. It's on an original tune called My Man Bill, and as you might imagine, it's a tribute to Count Basie. Thank you. little ironic twist I'd like to mention about that cut. There's a chronic complaint that we have that Canadian artists must go elsewhere to find recognition or steady employment in music. But that talent drain has been reversed in this case because the trumpet soloist, Sam Noto, is one of a growing number of U.S. jazzmen who have found a congenial lifestyle in Canada and an outlet for their talents. Other recent imports, as we like to consider them, have been Pat LaBarbera, a former saxophonist with Buddy Rich and Woody Herman, drummer Pete Magadini, Ted and Catherine Moses, each of whom leads successful groups and writes very excellent material, Marty Morrell, a former drummer with Bill Evans, and there are others. Now, that helps a bit to compensate for the Canadians whose careers have been largely spent elsewhere. Maynard Ferguson, Georgie Auld, for those of you who go back to Benny Goodman days, Gil Evans, the arranger with Miles Davis and others, and Oscar Peterson, of course. Peterson now spends more of his time at home and recording in Canada, albeit for an American company, the jazz-dedicated Pablo label of Norman Granz, who was the impresario who masterminded the old Jazz at the Philharmonic tours back in the 50s. The last two Peterson albums were produced in Toronto studios, and the very newest one, not yet in distribution, to my knowledge at least, was made with Canadian musicians and is largely a tribute to Canadian songwriters. Now, here's a sneak preview for you of Peterson's latest. It's a very personalized version of Canadian Mo Kaufman's Swingin' Shepherd Blues, which was an international hit, even with popular audiences several years ago. Thank you. I think any swinging that shepherd was doing must have been in a hammock. It slowed down to about half speed from what the original version used to be. Anyway, underneath all that string background, it's still the typical Peterson figures. It might be expected that Peterson would know of the caliber of top Canadian musicians, but the discovery has also been made by visiting performers who work in some of the major clubs backed by local jazzmen. Guitarist Jim Hall and the late Paul Desmond, whose alto gave the early Dave Brubeck Quartet its distinctive sound, were both sufficiently impressed to record here and to bring favorite Canadians to New York recording sessions. I think the best of those albums were done for A&M's Horizon, a jazz series that's now out of business. It's produced by John Snyder. When A&M's policy no longer favored quality jazz releases, Snyder took his production skills and his commitment to jazz into a new venture, his own company called Artist's House. Some unreleased material from those early Toronto Horizon sessions has since been issued, providing good opportunity for new audiences to hear fine Canadian performers such as guitarist Ed Bickert and pianist-bassist Don Thompson. Fortunately, Bickert and Thompson are well-recognized at home and in sufficient demand to be able to enjoy rewarding music careers without leaving the country. A recent duo album of the Canadian on the Canadian jazz label Sackville won the Juno Award, the equivalent of the U.S. Grammy, as the best jazz album of 1979. We'll hear just a bit of that album with Walkin' My Baby Back Home. It's an oldie in new clothes and a very good vehicle for both of them to improvise.
Thank you.
Sackville, and I have a sample of their catalog here, is one of a handful of small Canadian companies dedicated to jazz. The company is jointly run by John Norris and Bill Smith, two gentlemen also responsible for a major jazz and blues record store in Toronto, and for Canada's only jazz magazine, Coda. While Sackville produces Canadian and non-Canadian artists in a variety of jazz styles, I think it deserves special credit for presenting avant-garde or freely improvised music. This is an area considered untouchable by major companies here and in almost any other country. But with Sackville, convictions ring louder than cash registers. Smith is also the dominant figure behind Onari, another small label devoted exclusively to new music and controlled by the performers themselves. This music, while strange to many of us because it goes beyond familiar structures and conventions, is firmly entrenched as part of the creative music scene, and it's finding new audiences, it would seem, almost daily. We'll sample just a bit of Reedman Smith's latest album, which is called Pick a Number, and it features him with a cellist bassist David Lee, who's another Coda colleague, and violinist David Prentice. Now, their collective improvisation on Bones and Giggles, which is a Smith original, and Smith's words, that's in celebration of the sound of children. You have to use your imagination. Like anybody's children at home? Well, New Music has another champion in the Music Gallery Editions label. And when it comes to big bands with jazz soloists, they are featured on Umbrella, the only Canadian company to our knowledge which records in the direct-to-disc process, which is a challenge in itself. In frustration over the reluctance of most record companies to provide outlet for their work, many jazz men are underwriting privately released albums, and that's a very risky game. Very often, this approach results in a single album which may or may not recover expenses. Without benefit of distribution services, and with no experience or contacts in publicity or music sales, these independent musician producers face a mammoth hurdle. Their only guaranteed reward is the satisfaction of putting their own writing and playing skills on record. Anything more is a matter of timing and some breaks. One Canadian determined to release his own album was Vancouver's Fraser McPherson, a sax player in the classic big tenor traditions of such people as Coleman Hawkins and Ben Webster. His West End label released an album called Fraser Live at the Planetarium. It was a trio concert with guitarist Oliver Gannon and bassist Wyatt Reuther, the latter being another American expatriate whose home has been in Canada since the late 50s. Let's hear a bit of 10. Mm-hmm. McPherson is one of the more fortunate independents. After rave reviews in Cadence and Stereo Review, both U.S. publications, the Canadian RCA subsidiary took on the album for national distribution. And more recently, the California-based Concord Jazz label has licensed and reissued the album and has contracted with McPherson for further sessions. A small triumph along similar lines has come to an Ottawa guitarist, Roddy Elias, whose first album was released on a local label called Posterity. Just one of the many adventures of entrepreneur Harvey Glatt, who owns record and sound equipment stores, manages groups, produces concerts, and operates treble clef distribution services. Elias' album, A Night for Stars, has been licensed and reissued by Inner City, a jazz label that belongs to the Music Minus One empire with international marketing channels at its disposal. For every such success story, there are dozens of independent releases of excellent quality, which the public seldom hears. One such album is Winter Samba, the work of a guitarist in Toronto, Andy Crame, and three of his fellow musicians. This sole release on Crame's Silver Birch Productions comes from a tape performance at a now-defunct Toronto club called Yellow Fingers. It was fun while it lasted. It was produced by the multi-talented Don Thompson, whom we've already mentioned, and the title track, a Crame original, is a good example of the musical ideas of the younger jazzmen, whose fusion of acoustic and electric sounds is bringing fresh colors to jazz.
Thank you.
private release as a musician has to face the business decisions and the irritations that he might prefer to leave to a production company. Performance contracts, program selection, and studio booking are relatively easy. But then come the hard realities of pressing and packaging. A first pressing. In first pressings, usually the minimum number at a company such as RCA in its plant is 500. The CBS plant, the requirement is at least 2,000. Subsequent pressings, if one should be so fortunate, are sometimes possible in increments of hundreds. Jacket printing minimums are very similar, but most producers will find it best to print extra jackets in order to take advantage of favorable bulk printing rates. And perhaps this is also a sign of their optimism for future pressings. At any rate, this is an expensive prospect for an independent. Normal arrangements, I understand, at Sackville have been 2,000 copies on the first run, while Onari usually runs for 1,000, as does Posterity. And unfortunately, I have no information on other labels at the moment. Well, that very cursory treatment should leave you with some idea of the achievements and problems, the performers and the audiences, and the individuality as well as the shared influences in contemporary Canadian jazz. In spite of its limitations, the jazz scene is healthy and enjoying both a resurgence of public interest and a broadening of its creative base. Where does Canadian jazz go, and where does its record voice go from now on? That's always speculative, but signs point toward continued respect for traditions, along with the curiosity and the flexibility needed to develop more innovative approaches. Rigid labels applied to various styles are being discarded as barriers go down and performers blend and explore whatever they find to be appropriate and natural for them. Standards should continue to rise among performers, partly as a result of their training opportunities and partly as a result of increased exposure to top professionals. The educational spillover should also create a more discriminating audience. The latter is already evident in the growing number of jazz societies across the country. I think we can expect the number of jazz clubs or rooms with a partial jazz policy to remain relatively small but loyal. And unless there is a major shift in recording industry thinking, our creative performers will go on struggling to leave a permanent record of their work. Technology will give us better listening quality, better production quality, and the level is already quite high. But it will probably be the small, dedicated jazz labels and the individual musicians who give us the most satisfying and adventurous recorded music, in spite of the long odds against them. So jazz recording in Canada is definitely for the survivors. If there are any questions in the couple of minutes remaining, I'll try to answer. Yes.
Makes no difference, and any other country, a sufficiently small, can just put in their own country. It's an excellent summary of the jazz state since the beginning of time, practically.
Well, thank you.
One of the comments I have, though, or suggestions for you here in Canada, because you don't have what we operate under in the United States, which is the law of commercial survival of the fittest, and you don't. Necessarily. For instance, you have the CBC. Why can't the government sponsor a record label that will do exactly what you suggest, get the newcomer and give them a chance? What is wrong with trying to convince some of the brass to spring for a record company? You have the mechanics already established, the idea of the CBC, and you just take it and make it one step further for a record company to promote Canadian talent, Canadian innovation, the resources, and you haven't made. We can't do that in the United States because the United States government doesn't work in that way, and that principle of benevolence to the country and so on doesn't extend that way. But you do. You have that principle, and I don't see any reason why you can't, especially you and your colleagues here, can't push forward such
realization. I think you'll find we're the world's best pushers where we are, but we have, unfortunately, politicians who seem to have 10 years. They are very reluctant to spend money on anything, but, you know, there are hardcore of us who are, I can only use your word, pushing, and we keep at it. I agree with you, it's the way we should be going. And I thank you for your words about the talk. If you want to be my manager and set up the copyright, I can retire tomorrow. I'd love to do it. Are there any other questions I can
Well,
take?
I'd like to please make a remark here because my name is Dirk Kiekbas from CBC Recordings in Toronto, and it follows right upon my friend, his comment about taking things one step further. We've tried to take that one step further for 10 years. Yes, that catalog is about 3 years out of date. It isn't a small step. It's practically like that step that was taken on the moon, because there's a tremendous difference between a broadcasting organization and a recording organization. Tremendous, not small. It just so happens that we use the same type of hardware. You see. I came in a little late this morning, and just as you were busy talking about the youth, the younger people trying to develop in the jazz field. And I have a question for you because it's of some interest to me as what has ever happened to the Canadian Stage Band Festival?
We spent quite a bit of time talking about that.
Yes, I'm sorry that I omitted that, but I wasn't here for that.
Yeah, no, we spent quite a bit of time on that, and I did go briefly over its growth rate in its 8 years.
Is it still in existence?
Yes, it had its national finals here in Ottawa last weekend, and they were telecast coast to coast.
I see. Well, that's something, being an audio man myself, I omitted because it was a television presentation, apparently.
It's a very important movement.
Yes, we have recorded them back in 78.
We played a cut from that.
Yes, good, thank you. Now, in relation to the Canadian and the CBC's efforts in jazz recordings, one of its famous programs, which has now been melded onto a strip sort of show. It used to be called Jazz Radio Canada. And I'm in the process now of getting an album which will present, it's a double disc album, which will present the best of Jazz Radio Canada with the Nimmons, a group working with Big Miller and Kathy Moses.
Can you get Radio Canada back on the air?
I beg your pardon?
Could you get Radio Canada back on the air?
Well, now you're talking about a field of scheduling and programming in which I'm not involved. I'm involved in the actual bringing into existence of these discs, you see. That is my area. I have no input, so far as that's concerned. Yes. Yes, we can't all do everything.
No,
we
right.
try. We can. However, also, I think it was Torben Oxball that you were referring. Did you refer to him in Vancouver? Torben Oxball?
No, I was talking about Fraser McPherson.
Mm. Yes, and the Bob Stroop group in Stroop Street from Edmonton. All of these things will be included in that album. I'm busy working with the jacket on that right now and the tape to disc transfer. So that I can expect that in the fall towards early winter.
Good. Are there any other fast questions? I think we're running a bit late, aren't we, Tim?
My name is Bill Legere. I just want to make a remark regarding comments made by Knuckles O'Toole's protege over there. We do have a label called the Canadian Talent Library label, which does exactly that. It promotes Canadian music. I don't know the details of who produces it or if it's the CBC or whoever, but there is a label called Canadian Talent Library label. This does
Sorry.
Exactly that.
At which point did you come in this morning?
About 10 minutes ago.
Oh, because we dealt with Canadian Talent Library fairly early in the talk.
Yeah, well, I just thought he hadn't because he simply mentioned, well, why don't we have a label?
Yep.
We do. Thank
yes,
you.
I mentioned that. Thanks.
Yes.
Okay.
Do we have any other fast questions? Okay, thank you very much.